This is the web stream of KBOO Portland. KBOO is 100% community supported. If you have not yet become a member, go to the website kboo.fm and click on the tip jar.
Okay.
Because they come from a drawing, painting point of view, from a two-dimensional art point of view, and I do use drawing tools to help make them. They're very planned out in terms of how the light reflects, so that there is a specific pattern that I'm trying to achieve by creating the grooves, so that the light will reflect in a very particular place.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that the most unique thing about them is that the patterns of light, the shapes that emerge from the reflections, appear to exist in different places in space when you're standing in front of it looking at it.
Mm-hmm.
And they are very interactive, so that as you move, the images move with you and are related to you. So the source of the light, your location, and the piece is... are the three elements that determine what you see.
Right. So it's totally subjective in that sense.
Not totally, but no. Yeah.
All right.
I like to say it's equally subjective and objective.
Oh, okay.
There's certain parts of it that are, there's surface, and the surface has some texture to it. It is black only because I work in with a plastic material that's called PETG, which is fairly soft and fairly easy to incise to create grooves in it.
Mm-hmm.
And then the back of the plastic is painted. Right now, I'm just painting it black because it helps mm-hmm. to reflect offset the light, so that you can actually see the reflections really well.
Yeah. So you take a sheet of this PETG, which is a soft plastic used in making plastic bottles, things like that.
Mm-hmm.
You get it from the plastic supply place.
Mm-hmm.
And you said you used to buy this stuff anyway for doing monotypes, correct?
Yes. Right. Yes, it's a material that is pretty commonly used now as a what they call a plate for creating monotypes and monoprints.
Mm-hmm. And then you take a compass with a needle on the end, some kind of sharp end, and draw
right.
what look like concentric circles or concentric arcs.
Mm-hmm.
And then you do another pattern of similar ones that overlap in an interesting way, and that creates the reflection. Is that right?
Yeah. I think that probably it's, you know, this is very hard for people to see, to understand mm-hmm. when you're looking at it. It's more difficult to understand when you're looking at a photograph, because the photograph isn't interactive and you're not able
right.
to move around
right.
and see what's happening when you see it. But here on the radio, we're trying to describe something, and everybody's probably scratching their head, what are they talking about? but if you can imagine a single sort of clean scratch that has a radius to it, so that it's not a straight line, it's got a curvature to it. And you can imagine a single source of light shining on that. That if we look at that groove, it has a, if you look at it, let's say under a microscope or something that you could magnify it, it would have a certain shape to it.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of a, you know, curvature or whatever, so that when light was shining on it from one direction or another, it might reflect off different parts of that groove.
Mm-hmm.
But the curvature itself of this groove makes the light reflect on one portion of that groove. So if you can imagine a long groove that's got a curvature to it, and a single source of light, as you move, you will see that light coming off of a different part of that groove. So
mm-hmm.
you take that in combination with, in some cases, probably the large piece I have there, there's thousands of these grooves on there that I have done by hand. It's
mm-hmm.
a very physical, demanding somewhat tedious and you know, meditative at the same time. Process that to create all of these, they all work together, is what happens in the end. They all sort of work together in a way that creates these images of circles. And the circles are only, that's an arbitrary thing. I could be creating any image I wanted really on there. These are simple geometric shapes. I've sort of tried to focus on that because they're very basic and they're very they're abstract, and yet there's a lot of symbolism in circles. There's many layers of interest that make currently my interest in using circles sort of at the forefront. And it's quite unique.
Mm-hmm. So they're holograms, and traditionally, what's hologram image like? You know, you said the hologram sort of came into its own with the laser, and then what happened?
Well, we're, you know, just to call them holograms at all is probably what most people are thinking. I don't quite get this. How can you make a hologram by hand, first of all? But, yeah. What, you know, holograms that we are familiar with, they are generally things that are photographic images that we see. Mm-hmm. They can be what's called a reflection hologram or a transmission hologram. If in the case of a reflection hologram, you see them on your credit card, a little images that mm-hmm. seem to move around. We've seen more commonly when you see an image that is a transmission hologram, it involves the projection equipment and was made by lasers, and all, you know, there's a lot of different kinds of things. Currently, there's even digital holograms are being developed, which is very interesting. But mm-hmm. I have focused on this thing called abrasion holography simply because, first of all, I found it in an unusual way, and my interest in that sort of led me there through some reading in quantum physics. But most of the time when we see a laser, I don't know, it used to be very interesting. I mean, they've been developed, they were developed in the early 60s. It is something that became interesting to artists to work with at the time. But again, because the basis of them usually is photographic, they sort of had a period of time when they were very interesting to people. Mm-hmm. As the technology, digital technology developed, I think that it just surpassed they just passed up the people doing laser work particularly. And there was even a museum in New York in the 80s and 90s, I think it finally went out of business, a museum of holography. People were quite fascinated by them for a while. Mm-hmm. But I think in art it was difficult for people, partly because you might need to have a certain amount of equipment to own one,
yeah,
to see it. They had to be in a fairly dark room, and they were not easy to see. So,
right, and traditionally, what kind of, well, holograms? You go to a gift store, right, at the coast or somewhere. You see holograms for sale. What kind of imagery do you see? It's like,
oh, it's kitsch.
Yeah,
yeah,
monsters.
Yeah,
dragons.
Yes, and you know, and you can see these on, if you go online and you look for images. I don't know, something about the people that are interested in the technology seem to focus on certain things, and that's why my focus is on something so simple and geometric.
Right.
And there are artists working in holograms today still, and the ones that I think are most successful do tend to focus on something simple, something geometric, where you can see the relational activity happening. You can see the movement and the three-dimensional qualities without having to get caught up in some scary monster.
Right. I'm Joseph Gallivan. This is Art Focus on KBOO Radio. This week, our guest is James Minden. He's talking about his new show, Real Unreal, which runs at Augen Gallery until March 30th. James, you have a studio which you built yourself, which sounds really rather nice. So what do you listen to when you're working? What kind of music?
I usually listen to jazz.
Yeah. CDs, radio?
Both. Mm-hmm. CD, radio, internet. I like to move around.
Okay. Oh, let's listen to a bit of Miles Davis. What is this?
Kind of Blue, I think, from the CD Kind of Blue. I don't know what they're going to play.
Track one. What?
So what?
That was So What by Miles Davis from Kind of Blue. Well, what does music like that do to you when you're working? How does it make you feel?
It helps me move, actually. It's very physical.
Yeah?
That's what I do. And often involves a certain amount of... I need to establish, while I'm making these incisions, these grooves in the plastic... The quality of that groove is what I'm focused on. It isn't easy to do to create the quality that will reflect light really well. If you say scratch it and with a really sharp object, you'll get a lot of debris in the scratch, and thus it'll get in the way of reflecting light. So the quality of that. So I find the repetitive motion that I have to go through to get these things. And the hundreds of these that I'm having to make, I do them better when I am establishing a rhythm.
Yeah, right.
And sometimes that listening to music helps me to keep that rhythm, to have a certain pressure that I'm placing on this to create that particular kind of groove.
That would
be. And you know, it's. Here's the groove we're talking about. You know, you mentioned vinyl, and they do have a similarity.
So, mm-hmm. You started off by doing it on a table, so you're like leaning over all day doing these. Is it a lot of pressure when you use your hand?
No, not really. It's actually it's not a lot. It's in between. It's a medium sort of thing, but too light and you don't get enough. Of a groove too strong, and you create too much debris. But yes, leaning over was there's an ergonomics involved in anything that you do physical that has repetitive motion, and I've had to find my way around that and work through some physical difficulties so that I could find a way to do that. So now I work in an upright, more against the wall, kind of a.
Yeah,
easel-like thing that I've created to so that I can stand upright and not bend over and ruin my back. And now I had to work with the issue of tennis elbow that seemed to show up because I was twisting, turning my arm in a certain way, getting tendonitis, things like that. So. You know, it feels like a sport more than.
Anyway. So, but this is a departure for you from, you know, regular painting with acrylics. So this is a lot more. It's just a different medium, correct?
Yeah, it's you know, I still think of it as painting. I still think of it in those terms. I come to it as a painter, and. You know, as opposed to somebody who might be coming to it from a more technological point of view, but but I still see that, you know, and working with painting, you're dealing with light and dark, and you're dealing with color, but light is was what I sort of focused on and what these things have in common. You know, you always have the light is the way that we in a two-dimensional artwork. that we tell that we can have an impression of three-dimensionality. It creates the three-dimensional illusion. So in this case, I'm still doing that. I'm still working with light. I'm still creating a three-dimensional effect. But the medium is just different. I think I've had to develop, you know, you just develop, you work with the material, you work around the material, and you create methods. And in that sense, there's not really much different in paint than painting.
Right, right. And you're a fan of light artists, as they sometimes known, like Dan Flavin, James Turrell. Could you say a bit about your exhibition you went to see?
There's actually several, but recently there's been exhibitions in the one that was, I didn't see this, but I've read a lot about it and I've seen this, was one in San Diego at the Museum of Modern Art, the Museum of Contemporary Art in San Diego last year, maybe the year before, and it focused on a group of artists who came out of the 60s and 70s in California that were known as the California light and space artists. And mm-hmm. many of the people who work with light that I've paid attention to were in that group, and James Turrell, Larry Bell, Robert Irwin, among many others. And then in New York, there was a show last year at the New Museum that was on the subject of the history of the use of holograms in art, in contemporary art. They included Bruce Nauman and Salvador Dali and Robert Indiana, and James Turrell crosses over from both of those. He's mm-hmm. continuing to do them, and he's continuing to work with holograms today. We've had recently the exhibition that was at Disjecta last month. Chris Frazier is a great example of this light and space movement. He's probably one of the younger artists working in it, a spectacular installation mm-hmm. that was out there. And there's other artists working locally in with the subject of light. Laura Fritz comes to mind.
Mm-hmm.
So I think there's a lot of history in it. There's a lot of tradition inside of that. I think I separate myself slightly from the light and space movement in the sense that they focused on light and were actually trying to get away from the object. Mm-hmm. They really wanted to free art from being object. And I accept the object. I think I'm more interested in sort of combining that object subject discussion that we started having earlier. The two are inseparable, and I like the fact that these are objects, that people can own them, that it isn't just a projection of light in the corner of their room.
And I should add that you don't need to be in a dark room to get the effect.
Right. That's great.
You just, a regular light bulb in your living room would have the effect, right?
Right.
Absolutely. So if you were unlimited by time, space, and money, what kind of art do you think you'd be doing if you really wanted to experiment?
I've been trying to work larger, so space and money and opportunity can affect what you do with scale.
Mm-hmm.
In my show that's up at Ogden Gallery right now, I do have a piece that is 8 feet by 6 feet, which is the largest piece I've done so far. And I'm looking forward to doing some larger ones. I also would like the opportunity to have maybe to do something that was more of a, I don't know, installation type thing, so the scale becomes the whole room, and there's control and of mm-hmm. light and things that so those are the things I think about.
Are you planning any of that stuff, or is it how do you work, do you daydream about these things, or
You know, I'm not exactly planning on some of those things, but I have opportunities coming up that might lend me to do some things like a little differently. One of them is going to be at the Washington County Museum in Hillsborough. I'm scheduled to have a show out there. I believe November through February. And then next year at the Museum of Arts and Science in Macon, Georgia, I'm also doing an exhibition that'll run from June through September.
Mm-hmm.
So in that setting, there's not a focus on selling the objects, so I might have some freedom to push the limits of scale.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I'm Joseph Gallivan. This is Art Focus on KBOO Radio. This week our guest is James Minden. He's talking about his new show, Real Unreal, which runs at Augen Gallery's Old Town location at 716 Northwest Davis Street through March 30th. You've said that some people who can't see 3D movies, you know, they put the glasses on and they don't really see much, it's just flat, have come in and looked at your work and have said, oh yeah, I can see this for the first time, this 3D. Do you know why that happens?
Well, first of all, it isn't just that they can't see a 3D movie. These people can't see three dimensions in their day-to-day life.
Oh, okay.
From what I can understand from this, has something to do with usually one eye having a physical condition that usually from birth, from what I can understand too,
mm-hmm.
That prevents them from being able to focus, I guess, or focus their eyes in a certain way. You know, there's sort of three things going on that I see in that would affect people's ability to see these pieces as three dimension, and one of them is the fact that we have two eyes. We call it stereopsis, that we actually see differently out of each eye, and we're seeing a different point of view from, you know, the distance that our eyes are separated creates a point of view difference. So if you look at an object, you know, 2 or 3 feet away, open one eye, close the other, and then do the reverse, the object seems to shift a little bit in your view. So we actually create the sense of three dimension in our world by the fact that our eyes are seeing two different views and our brain is putting it together and creating the three-dimensional object. So this is something that these people apparently can't do, is have mm-hmm. that. And so without that, if you don't have that, what are the other things? Well, one of them is called parallax. It is something that you can where closer objects move faster than objects that are further away. So as you're moving around, mm-hmm. you can sense your position in space by the relationship of the objects that are there. And you can see that with one eye, for example. You don't need two eyes to do that. So I think that's one reason why they can see these as three-dimensional, is because they get that sense of space. But then there's one other thing, excuse me, that one of the things that seems to be happening with them, and that is that the light is coming off those grooves and focusing in space. As you get close to these and you get up and try to focus your eye on different scratches, different grooves, in different positions, as you're moving your eye around, you're finding your eye is actually changing focus. Even though you're only, say, a foot away from it, you would think that you would still be focusing at the same length, but mm-hmm. but you're not. So you're seeing the different reflections actually appearing into focus in space. So that is something that maybe they can see, mm-hmm. because one eye can see that, and maybe two would help. But those combination of things probably is what enables them to do that. So I think it's quite amazing.
Yeah. Is there some grand metaphorical takeaway from all this that, you know, it's about the way we perceive the world or the way we relate to things or about our personal subjectivity? Or do you just
well,
leave
definitely.
That up to
the... I mean, there's definitely the where this connects with my reading in quantum physics is a subject that they talk about the observer effect, and in quantum objects, in the, it appears as though the observer has a role in what actually is the result, say, of an experiment, and it violates a sort of common sense doctrine that we have of realism that assumes that the world is independent of observation, and in many cases it's not. So that to me is really fascinating, and it does bring up this whole subject-object, the relationship between the two, and you know, and in a very large way, it's something that I think we can pay attention to. It's a changing worldview that we need to pay attention to, whether or not we understand it completely. And I kind of hope, in a way, that these pieces will lead people to actually consider some of those things as being part of their the way that they perceive reality.
Mm-hmm. So just having this in your home might actually change the way you think.
It might.
Mm-hmm.
It might.
I'm Joseph Gallivan, and you've been listening to Art Focus on KBO Radio. This week, our guest was James Minden, talking about Real Unreal, which is at Augen Gallery through March 30th. So thank you very much, James.
Thank you for having me.
Andy Warhol, let's just scream. Hang him on my wall. Andy Warhol, silver screen. Can't tell him apart at all. Andy Warhol, looks a scream. Hang him on my wall. Andy Warhol, silver screen. Can't tell him apart at all.
Have you heard about the Melting Pot Silent Mobile Dance Parties?
Silent dance? Doesn't sound very fun.
Actually, it's a lot of fun. Picture 200 people dancing with headphones to the same music. The Melting Pot Radio Show will have a series of silent dance parties from 8 to 10 p.m. Tuesdays in Portland parks and public spaces. That's Tuesdays from 8 to 10 p.m. For more information and this week's location, go to KBOO.FM/silent dance parties.
KBOO Community Radio turns 45 this year, and our first 2013 membership drive starts on the 21st. Help make reaching our $99,000 fundraising goal a little easier by offering a matching donation of at least $500 for us to use on air during the drive. Matches are really great motivators to entice our non-contributing listeners to donate, so please email membership@kboo.org if you would like to offer a match or have any questions. Or call 503-231-8032 and ask for the membership department to plan your spring drive matching gift today.
Compare, shop, try, and buy at the Better Living Home, Garden, and Lifestyle Show, March 22nd through 24th at the Portland Expo Center. This show will introduce you to businesses and groups in our region that can help you make positive and responsible consumer choices. They'll cover renewable resources, electric transportation, and other ways to leave a smaller footprint on our earth. It's the Better Living Home, Garden, and Lifestyle Show, Friday, March 22nd through Sunday, March 24th. More information can be found at kboo.fm/betterliving2013.
Starting Thursday and continuing every day of our spring membership drive, it's KBOO's Vintage Poster Contest. Each morning at 7 a.m., we will post a new image of a historic KBOO event poster on our website, kboo.fm. You'll have until 3 p.m. that same day to enter the contest for a chance to win the only other known copy of the poster. See the art and enter the contest at kboo.fm. Only one entry per person per day. Spread the word about KBOO's poster contest. Anyone can enter. Scanning and reproduction services for KBOO's poster contest provided by Technical Imaging Services located in Portland's Old Town.